Today, we're finding out about academic life in the prep school, but also we find out about Piers Davidson as a person. As well as being the prep academic lead in school, he's also had a very interesting life so far, and he's about to share it with us. Come with me into this episode to find out more.
Welcome to Mount Kelly Conversations, the podcast from Mount Kelly in Devon. In each episode, we have conversations with pupils, with staff, and with other people in the school community to find out more about life at the school. Come with us now as we get right into this episode.
Piers, welcome to this episode of the School Podcast. Thank you for being here. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you very much, Simon. It's a privilege to be on and very happy to share who we are and what we do.
Well, it's great to be talking to you here today, and I appreciate you giving up the time because I imagine that you are very, very busy. You work in a school, and it strikes me that everybody who works in any school seems to be extremely busy these days. Tell me, we're recording this on a Thursday. What do Thursdays typically look like for you?
Oh, crikey. They're never the same. They're always frenetic, but there is a teaching commitment. So I teach probably four lessons of maths on a Thursday to upper prep, which is our year sevens and eights. I've got various other responsibilities across the piece. However, this morning I've taken the reins of our inter-house quiz. So we've been quizzing years three and four on it's a fantastic app. I don't know if you or people listening be aware, but Kahoot. Children will have a question and they will have a multiple choice answer, and points that they accrue in that app will count towards their inter-house quiz total, which then goes into the house competition, which then subsequently Scott will win, as that is my own house. However, I can't be biased, but the children love it. I mean, it's such a great way to get engagement. Simple questions, building up those points. So year three have done one, year four will do one, and then we've got a massive, great big finale on Friday, which will be our inter-house quiz competition.
Brilliant. Now, of course, people can use Kahoot at home as well, can't they? I'm saying this because my own children told me about Kahoot a number of years ago. We ended up using it at home as a family. But it's one of those things, isn't it, if I remember rightly, that children can use, they'll be learning without sort of even realizing that they're learning.
It's a great tool for engagement. None of these things are a panacea. But if we pose questions on Kahoot, we've got the potential to pause, have a look at those questions, go through those questions. And you're right, you know, the children don't see it as a formal learning experience, but they will be learning things along the way, undoubtedly.
Now, let's talk about education and yourself. I mean, how did you get into working in education in the first place?
Do you know, I was listening to Dom's podcast on Mount Kelly Conversations, and his lineage is direct. You know, his dad's a head teacher. His brothers are teachers. You know, comes from a very long line. My route is much more circuitous. I wanted to be a lawyer when I left university.
Oh, okay.
So I did a law degree many years ago, and I pursued research, and I did some looking at legislation and research and the impact of legislation in different organisations. It was very... I wrote a significant amount of reports that I don't believe anybody actually ever read. So it's, you know, and there's quite an insular quality to that job. It was quite a one-person based office sort of experience. So I wanted a bit of adventure. I travelled across to Europe. I did a CELTA, a TEFL qualification,
and that's teaching English as a foreign language. Is that
right? Yes. Yep. Yep. And had an absolute. Just an awesome experience, you know. And I bought into that with the idea of traveling, but fell in love with the teaching rather than traveling. So moved back to the UK, picked up some various teaching posts. I've taught English, taught some maths, and then went back to university, did a further 2 years in maths and qualified as a secondary maths teacher.
Gosh. And what is it about working with children that you enjoy?
Do you know, it is... I guess it's the humanity. You are touching base with everybody and anybody, and that those relationships are at the core. So it's seeing lots and lots of different people helping. There's a real. It's not altruistic. There's a real sense of achievement when you've helped people, supported them, and achieved different things. And always a captive audience. You know, so there's I think inside every teacher there is that aspect of you know, just love to present, love to be at the front, love to be the center of attention. So yeah, there's very few things about the job that I don't like.
And what if I can ask you this, what is your teaching style? You know, if I spoke to one of your pupils right now and asked them what Mr. Davidson is like, what would they actually say, do you think?
Do you know, I think one size doesn't fit all. So depending on the student that you talk to, we are always adapting to the room. So how I teach a top set in year eight might be very different to how I'm teaching a bottom set in year five, for example. The engagement tools that we use and the relationships that you have with those students will be different. So yeah, I mean, they could give some very different answers. I would hope that they would say, I enjoy those lessons. On a good day, I would hope they'd say, yeah, I'm very interested. I've been interested by those lessons, and on a great day, they're inspired by those lessons. So yeah, I think there's a hierarchy of different change there, but I would like to think that I have fun and engaging lessons.
It is quite a responsibility, isn't it? I mean, you know, without wanting to put undue pressure on you at all, you've got enough of that working in a school for sure. But, you know, if any of us or anybody listening to this right now thinks back to when they were at school, if you mention your maths teacher, then I think most people can remember their maths teacher when they're at school, whether they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, or even older than that. So it's kind of, must be quite strange for you to think to yourself right now that the pupils that you're teaching in 50 years' time will still remember who you are.
Oh, it's fascinating, isn't it? I hope so. I hope for the right reasons as well, Simon. Yes, no, I think that's... I have to say, I met one of my teachers a few years ago in Nairobi. I was teaching in Kenya.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the most fortunate experience. Yeah, it's a drama teacher that I had when I was probably about 10. Gosh. And I was so excited to see her. I ran up to her and said, Miss Jago, it's brilliant to see you. I just saw this sort of look of horror on her face, as if to say, my God, you're 40 now. what does that make me? And I've always remembered that with students coming up to me. And it's a really fortunate place to work in Mount Kelly, because previously I've worked in standalone prep schools, and you send these pupils off into the distance and you never see them again. But here we still have contact for many years afterwards, and I see pupils who have now gone right the way through the system, have cleared their A levels and are going on to great things. We had a pupil just recently that I taught many years ago who has just been accepted into Oxford. That was the news on the common room on Monday. It's brilliant. It's brilliant to still have that connection with students many years down the line.
Now, of course, in your role there as being the academic lead at the prep, I'd love to understand a little bit more about what that actually means. Some of the people listening to this right now, they might be parents of current children who are at the school. They might be parents of children who aren't at the school just yet. And they're thinking, well, what does prep academic lead actually mean? Just tell us a bit more about that.
So it is partly design of the curriculum. So what do we teach? When do we teach it? Mm-hmm. Who teaches it, etc. There are lots and lots of facets to that. But the collaborative aspects and the creativity that goes into that is fundamental. So I guess the fun part of my job is making sure that students are working in an engaged environment. For example, pieces off the top of my head, last year, Mr. Carr, for example, in history, taking students out, reenacting the Battle of Hastings, looking at kind of like links between, art and maybe English, making puppets for kind of like plays, that sort of stuff. I teach maths, but I'm also an ICT teacher. So, when we're designing that curriculum, I'm working with Mr. Briggs, who is who's just got a 3D printer, which is fantastic, fabulous stuff. But we're working on a project together with some BBC Microbits, designing different instruments with a 3D instrument attached to it as well. So the best part of my job is to kind of link those different pieces together. It's a great place to be. And I think the best thing about working in a prep school is it's everywhere. We don't just learn in one place. I'd like to flag the learning outside the classroom. That's a big piece.
Well, Battle of Hastings reenactment, classic example.
Indeed. But we are a school that heads off everywhere and anywhere. When you're a year seven joining Mount Kelly, the first thing we do is a field trip on day one down to Tintagel. And that is up on top of Tintagel Castle. We've got a washing line set up with a chronology of the history. And on a beautiful sunny day, you can't beat that. And then, you know, at the end of year eight, I run a residential down to the Lizard in Cornwall.
Oh, lovely.
Which is just fabulous with Marconi monuments and all sorts of learning going on down there. Mm. So, yeah, we are everywhere and anywhere. With fabulous grounds as well. So, again, it is outside the classroom. We have a great project with Nature Connectivity running now and researching the impact of nature on learning itself.
What would you say makes teaching and learning a little bit different at Mount Kelly just compared to other schools?
Well, I'd say it's the sheer diversity, of experience that we offer, as above all of the learning environments that we offer. But I guess the pedagogy is significant as well. We've just received a Thinking Schools accreditation from Exeter University, which is a mark of quality in terms of our cognitive science that's embedded within the curriculum and how our teachers are teaching. So looking at metacognition models in education, which is great.
Tell us a bit more about that. You know, you mentioned words like metacognition and pedagogical approach to teaching, I think you said, or something like that. Some of these words are words which might be a little bit less familiar for the people who are listening to this.
Sure. Do you know, the metacognitive aspect is making students aware of how they learn. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, teachers throughout all ages are drilled on content. Students are learning this, 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 and this. But the real goal is to have that agency with the pupils themselves. Mm. You know, can students take the learning themselves, and can they develop that learning? And are they doing it under their own steam? Because if we can create pupils who are confident in developing their own learning, you know, that's a absolute goal and a half, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then you mentioned as well about the outdoor learning. I mean, I'm thinking back to when I was at school myself, and it's true that some of those experiences where we are learning outdoors in a different environment to being sat at the desk are sometimes the moments which really do stick. But I'd love to understand a little bit about why or how children learn in a different kind of way when they're in a different environment.
I guess you have different things for different children. You know, some children are going to respond very, very well to a traditional chalk and talk experience, mm-hmm. Which, of course, is part of the experience. But we have other children who will be engaged in different ways in different places. Context is everything, isn't it? Mm. So I think back to, you know, some of the things that we have done outside. Like, for example, last year we celebrated Earth Day and we turned off all of the lights, all of the computers, everything kind of like switched off in the school electricity wise. And you know, you could stay in your classroom, but the encouragement was that let's head outside. So I was looking at volume of cylinders. At the time, that was in the scheme of work, which, you know, could quite easily be a worksheet and, you know, sat down half an hour, do some practice and examples, etc. But to give it a context, we went out into the woods. We look at some of our trees, and they're massive trees on site. It's amazing grounds. And we model the tree as a cylinder. You know, so how much wood is in that tree?
And then I see.
Exactly. So and then we say, well, how much carbon is the tree made out of? How much carbon dioxide has been taken out of the atmosphere and sequestered in that tree? And you know, for some people, that context is the piece they need to get over. You know, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? It's always the question that teachers, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? That, you know, some students desperately need a reason for their learning.
For like learning algebra or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, but anything at all. You know, talking about Tintagel Castle, you know, it could be a very dry experience walking around Tintagel Castle, but if you are looking at the history and you've got a washing line, or you're making a bridge out of some straws and tape, kind of like in front of a massive, I don't know if you've been to Tintagel, but the cantilever bridge down there is fantastic. Mm. So, you know, having that aspect, having something tangible, something real, something contextual can be very powerful.
What do you think children at a prep school like Mount Kelly tend to learn and take away with themselves for their future lives?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think it's probably confidence. I think that's kind of like the key for me is, do we have children who are comfortable in their own skin. And I think we have an environment where we allow that to happen. We can create an environment where children are happy to take risks. You know, we're a smaller community. We're a very inclusive community where children are able to take the risk and fail and then try again and try again and try again. I think that's a great place to be. I think we are a place that has very strong relationships because of those sizes, and children have the opportunities to explore so many different things.
And when you mention confidence, you know, sometimes people ask that question, you know, how do you get the balance right between confidence and arrogance? Tell me a little bit about how you instill that confidence without letting it go too far and then producing children who kind of do have a level of arrogance.
I think honest feedback is key. So how we model our behaviours to children is fundamental. I would like to think that we are the role models for our pupils. So fingers crossed, hopefully we don't come across as arrogant, and that hopefully will transpire into our student body.
Role modelling is so important, isn't it?
Oh, it's fundamental. Yeah, and again, kind of like we have a staff common room, which the relationships that are in there, I think, it's. One of the reasons why you become a teacher is that collegiate mentality and camaraderie. So we've got a great staff room at Mount Kelly, great world of experience. And I think hopefully that pays dividends in how we represent ourselves to our children.
I'm sure that it does. I'm 100% convinced that it does. Piers, I'd love to know something a little bit more about you. We found out a little bit about how you got into working in education in the first place. But say on a Friday after you finish for the week and then you go home for the weekend or wherever you go for the weekend, what do you tend to do in your spare time?
Spare time is a very valuable commodity in my house, Simon. I've got a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old.
There's no such thing as spare time then.
There
really,
is no such thing as spare time, no. I love podcasts. I think, it's rare for me to be on this side of the microphone, but I very much enjoy listening to podcasts.
Good.
I've developed a real love of audiobooks.
Oh, okay.
Which is brilliant. I cycle.
Okay.
And read.
Am I allowed to refer to the mammal acronym in that case?
Oh, really? Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Middle-aged man in Lycra, that's it.
Yeah. Mm. I have a fair share of Lycra.
Okay.
I did a joggle a few years ago, John O'Groats to Land's End.
Oh, gosh, you really are into cycling then, aren't you?
Well, it was a Le Jog. It was a Land's End to John O'Groats.
Okay.
Do you know, and I was avid cyclist at the time, but not so much now with the children and so forth. But I do like to get out whilst I can.
And when you listen to podcasts and audiobooks, any recommendations for us?
the appropriate ones. I'm a big fan of You're Dead to Me at the moment with Greg Jenner on Radio 4, history podcast. I enjoy Sideways. I think that's great. Books-wise, Anxious Generation, that was a great book. And Ravenous by Dimbleby as well. And I love The Murph as well. No Such Thing as a Fish is a particular favourite.
Oh, very good, very good. Piers, it's really interesting talking to you because, you know, we found out that you're into podcasting, into audiobooks, into cycling, that in school you've taught maths and ICT. I think you mentioned English at one point as well.
Sure.
You've lived in the UK, you've lived overseas as well. You've had different careers. It strikes me that you're one of these people who's kind of generally interested in most things in life.
Do you know, I will nail my colours to the mast and say curiosity is at the key of all of this.
Ooh.
Yeah. If I can share that curiosity with the children, I think that's a great place to be. Mm. I agree. I have a wide range of interests. And I think we can find interest in the smallest and biggest things.
Mm.
So yes, no, that is true.
Okay, and then last question. If you were stranded on a desert island and you could take three things with you, what would you take?
Simon, this is an awful question. the idea of being stranded on a desert island is terrible, isn't it? I can't think of anything worse. Mm. I appreciate it's a thought experiment. Mm.
Just say a TARDIS, really, so then you can get back to wherever you need to go.
Give me a boat. I think that would be marvellous. But I would say if push comes to shove, I'm going to give you a very boring answer, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. I'm a massive fan of these alone programs or survival programs in the wild.
Oh, okay.
I would go for your absolute basics of survival. So I definitely have something to light a fire. Are these things already supplied, or do I have to go for the bare basics?
You can only take three things. So
only take three things?
Yeah.
Good Lord. Okay, so...
Don't bother with a Kindle, because you haven't got a power supply or anything like that.
Oh, that's a shocker. Absolute shocker. Can they be big things? Can I have the entire works of Shakespeare? Is there a limitation?
So. Yeah,
there's a mathematician in me coming out of there, Simon. I need to know the parameters. So I would go for your basics. Definitely some sort of flint to start a fire. Mm-hmm. I would definitely have, some sort of treat along the way, isn't it? It's a horrible question, because the idea of not being around people is a terrible thing. So maybe a telescope, maybe
you could take some people with you.
Can I take people? If I can take people, then
I don't think they'd appreciate it. But nevertheless,
that's very kind of you to say so, Simon. What could be better than spending eternity on a desert island with Mr.
Well,
Davis?
Where should I start?
So I'd definitely take my family. I mean, that would be front and centre, of course. And I think if I've got a lot of downtime, which I'm guessing on a desert island I would, then definitely reading material, probably a telescope. Am I allowed the internet? Could I have the internet?
You could take the internet. Let's say you can take as many books as there are prime numbers for a math teacher.
That's
got to be pretty good.
Well, it's an infinite supply, isn't it?
Infinite, yeah.
So definitely Spotify. I'd have Spotify as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Along those lines.
Well, we've got a few things there. Hopefully we'll never have a need for them.
That's a rubbish answer. Should have thought about that more.
Fizz, it's really interesting to talk to you. It's great to find out about being a prep academic lead at Mount Kelly. But in particular, actually, it's really good just to find out a little bit more about you. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you for being here.
Very kind, Simon. Thank you for your time.